GAA on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Hello and welcome back to the Hurling Show here on Off the Ball, brought to you by Boyle Sports. My name is Shane Stapleton. With me this week I have a couple of inter-county legends, I suppose it's fair to say. Michael Verney from the Independent, former Offaly hurler. How are you doing?
Not too bad, Shane. Good to be here.
Darragh O'Connell, formerly of Kerry and possibly formerly presently of Dublin Hurlers. How are you doing, Darragh?
Good, thanks.
Let's get straight to it, Darragh. You didn't line out for Dublin this year. How come, and do you expect to see yourself back in the blue shirt?
Yeah, well, look, I spoke to Pat after the in April, I suppose, and I'd missed a lot of last year, and I had a recurrence of an injury that I had a couple of years ago in my foot. And look, if you're not 100% going into inter-county hurling, you can't help the team. And unfortunately, I suppose I had to make a tough call to take a break and see if I could get the body right. And I was in a boot for a couple of weeks after that and things, and it's only with the last probably 2 weeks really that I started to do a little bit again.
We never know what the future.
Never know what the future holds. We'll see how the next couple of months pan out, yeah.
Grand, okay. So just as a Kerry man, and after seeing what happened with Eamon Fitzmaurice at the weekend, and he talked about getting hate mail, this type of thing, how rough are you Kerry fans?
Well, look, I suppose in Kerry, football's number one is religion. You know, they expect, I suppose, a lot of supporters down there expect All-Irelands every year. But look, there was no place for that kind of, I suppose, hate mail or that criticism in our game, be it for players or managers or whoever it is. So, I mean, it was totally unwarranted. And I suppose a lot of managers have spoken about it in the last couple of days, and it's something that seems to have crept into our games. I suppose to sit down and write a letter takes a while, you know. It's easier to go online maybe with a fake account and abuse someone from there, but to sit down and write hate mail takes a little bit of effort and a little bit of thought. So,
and like, do you see that down home, that people get that worked up about it, that they would be moved to do that? But to be fair, I suppose it is a countrywide issue.
Probably is a countrywide issue. Look, I mean, there's you have to remember, this is, those people are in the minority. Look, there's some GA people across the country, great people everywhere, you know, and I think they're probably in the minority, and I hope they stay in the minority, you know. It's probably got a little bit of traction over the last couple of days, but I suppose I see from myself, from growing up in Kerry, my mum was from Menard in West Kerry, and you know, in West Kerry, football is everything really. And I suppose the happiness during the winter depends on how the Kerry football team go in August or September. So from that point of view, down home, it is a religion, you know.
I'm convinced it's a PR stunt by On Post. Because I haven't heard, in the last couple of days, I've heard more about people writing letters than I have in the last 10 years. I thought that was kind of a thing of the past. But there's no legislation for, in every club and in every county, there's always, without being smart, there's always a cohort of idiots that will send things like that. Like, we've had some sent to, in our club, like, to maybe secretaries and officials of the club, like, and you can't legislate for that. Most of it is absolute nonsense. Like, some of it can be a bit vicious, but it's, most of the time it's just like stupidity really reigning more than anything else. But it's a bit mad, and I think it's convenient, funnily enough, this week for the All-Ireland managers, you know, for John Kiely and Micheál Donoghue to be talking about that rather than talking about the match.
It does
completely, and like, Micheál Donoghue probably talked more about getting letters than he has about any tactics or anything like that over the last couple of years. So it's kind of convenient for them in a sense too.
I was going to ask you, did you get any of it when you were at Offaly? But I suppose you were winning all around you, so why would anyone send you any letters?
I got a small bit with the Indo actually over some racing tips that I popped. That was about it.
Bankrupt a few people.
That was about it, yeah. Well, more fool them now if they're following all my tips. But I think that's kind of par for the course. When you put, no more than a manager, a player, a journalist, when you put your name out there, you're going to be open to criticism. And I suppose if you can't take that criticism, you probably shouldn't be there. But you have to have a kind of a thick neck, I suppose.
Yeah, like last night, even watching the under-21 game between Galway and Tipperary, which we'll talk about a little bit more later on, I did a tweet about the Galway goalkeeper when he went down, and I felt he went down a little bit handy. Oh, I was told how disgraceful I was by a number of outlets, but obviously he was injured, so...
He actually hit himself.
Yeah, I mean, Mark Yeo came across him in his own hurling.
It was probably mildly dangerous, but no more than yellow. Definitely not.
We'll come back to that anyway. So Galway beat Clare at the second time of asking, and it sets up a great All-Ireland final with Limerick. First of all, Dara, were you impressed with Galway? Like, they started like a house on fire and then they seemed to fall asleep for 20 minutes, but saw it out.
Yeah, started so well again. They should have been much further ahead after 20 minutes. I think it was probably a carbon copy of the day before, almost. You know, Clare seemed to sit back a little bit, and there was periods of play in the first 20 minutes where John Conlon and Shane O'Donnell seemed to be the only two players inside the 65. You know, not to mind the 45, they were trying to come back. And you probably had Colin Galvin sitting back as well.
Too much?
Probably. I think it was probably Galway had set up properly. They'd done their homework and they had managed to, I suppose, bring in Conor Whelan to number 11, started running at them a little bit more, and you'd runners off the shoulder. But I suppose they were probably disappointed with that opening 20 minutes not to be further ahead. But then again, look, they won the game. They're back in an All-Ireland final. That's where you want to be. Having not produced their probably best 70 minutes yet, if I was a Galway player going into a final like that and I suppose underperforming somewhat, I think that's where I'd love to be, you know, the biggest stage and the opportunity to hurl for 70 minutes.
I thought that Clare started, they're a little bit lax at the start. I think we have an image coming up here where David Reedy, at the start of the game, the ball comes across him, can easily take it with his hand, goes with the hurley, ends up getting turned over by Aidan Hart. He hands it off to Joe Canning and it's 4 points to nil. And like you said, did Clare have enough players up at the far end of the field? Because there was times when Tony Kelly might have got the ball, Gavin, and there weren't really options to hit the ball too, other than going long onto John Conlon and Shane O'Donnell.
They shot themselves in the foot there in a way too, like, yeah, as well. But like, Conlon is their biggest outlet, full forward, and by Galway knowing what they were doing and being able to set up for the fact that they were probably going to play a sweeper, like, they negated one of their best players as well, unfortunately. And then a lot of the choice of ball and the direction of the ball and the way it was going into them was quite poor as well. Like, so I felt they shot themselves in the foot. But Galway's flexibility is remarkable, and how adaptable that they are. The fact that you can have a guy in Joe Cooney who's been playing wing forward for the last couple of years, and he can just go back wing back, and he was outstanding wing back. And I know people would say that he played there in college or played there with a club, but going in there at county level and just like fitting in seamlessly is kind of remarkable as well. And Pádraig Mannion slipping back to sweeper, and Whelan, who's been corner forward or wing forward in every game nearly he's played for Galway, can go centre forward and have such a big impact on the game and control the game nearly. It's remarkable. But I do think Clare missed a trick, I have to say. I thought that game was there for the winning from them.
Darry, you've played against this Galway team. Did you play against them last year?
Not last year, no, the year before probably, yeah.
What are they like? Physically huge?
Physically huge men, yeah. And really try, I suppose, to physically dominate the game. And they probably did that for the first 20 minutes, you know, as you said, like, you can missing Gerald McInerney but then bring him back, you know, just Cooney to stand at centre back, you know, a really
Niall
imposing figure. Yeah, bringing in Niall Burke. So yeah, they are really, really physical, and you're going to see some great matchups in the final in terms of physicality.
So, like, what do Galway do about this thing of building up an early lead, which they've now done against Kilkenny and Clare twice, and they've let the opposition back into it? What's happening there, do you think, Mike?
Yeah, just on something Dara said, I'm in the opposite camp. I think they've kind of stuttered somewhat to get here.
Yeah.
And there's two ways you can look at it. There's two ways you can be. We're in the final, we haven't hurled well, we're going to unleash something unbelievable in the final, or we've been paping over the cracks. It's hard to know which you're going to get. With regards to the start, like, they didn't score for 20 minutes the other day, which is quite remarkable, and still we're leading even after not scoring in that 20 minutes. It's hard to know what Micheál Donoghue will try and do there. Maybe they're sitting back a small bit when they're getting up a lead. I suppose it's to try and keep the foot on the throw a bit more and show maybe that rootlessness that they had last year. How that actually manifests itself is quite a difficult thing. It's probably something they're going to have to plan for. It's happened in the last two or three games anyway, and it's something that they're going to have to try and prevent from happening, because if they have a lull like that in an All-Ireland final, I can't see them winning again.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, that suggests that there's a chink there that Limerick can exploit. Probably every team has had their patches where they're good and bad in every game, so it's probably going to go down to the last puck of the ball. But like, Clare failed to score from play for the first 20 minutes. Aaron Shanahan has a goal chance to put them two up with 3 minutes to go. Now, we know Galway have plenty of time to come back at that stage as well. I just do wonder, like, when it comes down to the last 10 minutes, is the experience of Galway going to tell?
If they're in that position with 10 minutes to go, I would imagine that it would help.
Yeah.
But if Limerick can kind of stave off that bad start and keep themselves in the game, then it's a different ball game altogether. Galway are in a different position probably that they haven't been in this year. They've started fast in nearly every game, bar the draw in Leinster final. So if they're, you know, a point or two down at half time, that changes. And I think a lot of the thing the other day with Clare was Clare couldn't get ahead. They had all sorts of chances to get ahead and couldn't get ahead. And even in the drawn game, they couldn't get ahead until Chanter's goal was the first time they got ahead. So when Galway are faced with that adversity maybe earlier in the game, if they are, that'll be interesting to see how they respond. If they're in the game, going down the stretch, they're going to be hard beaten, though.
Yeah, you're right. I think they led for maybe 2 minutes of the 160 between the two different games. So, yeah. Paul Brown spoke with Maura Trasaní-Kallig earlier in the week on Off the Ball AM, and here's what the injured Limerick star had to say.
It's a pre-All-Ireland final, and I'm joined here by Limerick's Paul Brown, who, judging by a tweet you sent out a few days ago from a hospital bed, I'd say the chances of you actually playing an All-Ireland final are fairly slim to none.
Yeah, very slim altogether. But look, as I said to the boys the other day, the only difference between me and them now is when you're playing, you're only hitting the balls you hit, but I'm hitting every ball on the sideline now, and to be honest, I'd rather be playing because I'm not able for the watching, you know.
I'm assuming if I was in your shoes, I'd be feeling a little bit of feeling left out, fear of missing out, some FOMO.
No, for the first couple of days I was a bit down, all right, you know, as you would be. Like, I mean, no sports person wants to hear that after tearing their cruciate, you know. So I was bitterly disappointed for that first few days. But after that, you know, I just had a choice whether to feel sorry for myself or whether to get the show on the road again, you know. So I haven't missed the training yet. I've been at everything so far that the boys have done with. The only difference is I can't hog out and play. So I don't feel left out. The lads have been absolutely fantastic to me over the last number of weeks. They understand exactly my predicament. They've been very good to me. They've included me in everything. Always a friendly text or asking me to go for coffee or to meet up, you know, and keep me going, you know. So they've been absolutely fantastic. I'd be forever indebted to them, what they've done for me for over the last 4 or 5 weeks, you know. And it'll continue over the next 2 weeks, no doubt. And even though they're worried about their preparations, I'm still getting messages and asking me how I am and stuff, you know, and how the surgery going, all that. So they're a fantastic bunch of lads, great friends to have.
You have a very positive outlook, but I can only imagine in the hours, especially after knowing you've done this injury to yourself. I mean, you're only human. It must have hurt.
It did, yeah. I remember lying on the ground after it happened with Joe O'Connor, the S&C coach, and I said, Joe, I'm done for here, like, you know, just directly after it happened. And he was like, ah, don't worry. But you know yourself, like, when it's, you know the sound, the feeling, like, you know, it's you know what it is, you know it's bad. So I kind of knew, I was very resigned to it very early on, but obviously I suppose when I went up to see Dr. Ray Moran in Century, and when he confirms it, you know, your heart sinks another little bit, like, but look, I suppose I'm over it now. It's a good few weeks ago now. I've missed the quarter final, the semi final, and I'll miss the final as well. But look, I just want the boys to do the job, you know. It's just out of the blue. It was just the way it happened. It was a bit of a perfect storm. I had the hurling around the fella and just twisted me just as I planted my leg, you know. So just everything kind of came together. The dry ground, the dry grass was coming as well, you know, and the pitch was a bit dry, you know, as well. So it's just a perfect storm really when it came to the injury, you know. So
I don't want to go too squeamish with it, but yeah. Thankfully most of us will never know what it feels like to rupture a cruciate. How would you describe it?
It's just a pop and a crunch and just a shudder, and it just kind of goes up starts in your knee and goes up into your soul nearly, like, you feel it, like, you know. But I suppose anyone who's done it knows exactly the feeling, and I suppose it's nearly hard to describe. You don't wish it on anyone, you know, but look, it happens. I mean, there's loads of people. I'm not the first to do it, and I won't be the last to do it either, you know. So
how are you preparing for All-Ireland final morning? Because obviously your preparation, you're part of the team, but it's going to be different.
It is, I suppose. I don't have to separate myself from the media or the news stories or watching the games and stuff, you know. I don't have to do that. I mean, even though I looked after tickets and stuff myself, like, you know, whereas usually I'd pass it on to someone else, I don't have to worry about playing, like, you know. So I'm like the supporter with the best seat in the house, really, you know. So look, I'll enjoy it as much as I can. I'll try and be as big a help as I can to the lads over the next couple of weeks. And I suppose it's amazing what you pick up on when you're not togged, you know, and worrying about your own game. You spot a lad who might be down at training or mightn't have had the best session or mightn't have had the best drill, and you just have a word with them and just say, look, I go again, like, you know. And I mean, there's huge competition in our squad, so just trying to drive lads on to be their best and do their best over the next couple of weeks is what I'm kind of focusing on, you know.
Your approach is very mature. I don't know if I'd be that philosophical about it if that was me out of an All-Ireland final, I have to say.
Yeah, but look, I suppose I wanted to stay around with the boys. I wanted to be part of it. I said to the boys there a couple of nights ago, I said, if you think I'm hanging on, I am, because I kind of knew what was coming with this group, you know. So I wanted to be a part of that, and I've no part being there if I'm sulking and feeling sorry for myself, like, you know. So I'm not feeling sorry for myself, you know. I just hope we get the job done on the day. That's all I want, you know, as a win for Limerick.
Yeah, Limerick getting to an All-Ireland final without Paul Brown, but he's an excellent player, Darragh. You've played against him.
Yeah, super player. Great worker in the middle of the field. And I suppose he would be someone that Limerick would look to in a final if he was starting, you know, someone who's been around the block, he's experienced, and obviously a leader too. So I think he would certainly be invaluable to Limerick in the first kind of 20 minutes to settle him down, you know, when things are maybe not going their way or whatever. So, but look, it would be difficult to fit him in at the moment, wouldn't it?
That's the question. Like, yeah. Even if you said move Keane Lynch into the forwards, who drops out? Because yeah. That half forward line is so good.
Yeah. They have been exceptional. And I think that shows their strength and depth at the moment. You know, players coming in like Shane Dowling last day or Pat Ryan or whoever it is who's came off the bench has helped them at different times. And even if they had Paul Brown, you know, there for the last 20 minutes, you know, again, he's another option that they might have. So he's definitely a huge loss, but it's good to see him on the road to recovery too.
Yeah, and plenty of pace as well. It's been a pretty interesting week from a refereeing point of view. James McGrath didn't get called up for the All-Ireland final. James Owens is after getting the match. James McGrath was on the 6-1 news, did an interview saying that basically the decision was made for him, that because he wasn't selected for the All-Ireland final, he felt that he was going to have to retire. We have a former inter-county referee, Brian Gavin, on Skype just now. Brian, how are you doing?
Hello, lads. How are you keeping?
Not so bad, and yourself? First of all, what do you make of James not being selected for the All-Ireland final?
I suppose, first of all, Shane, it came as a shock to a lot of people because the trend the last number of years since 2005, since Seamus Roach was the last man to ref a semi-final and go on and ref a final, the precedent really has been you're reffing maybe two or three games, you get a quarter-final, you get a provincial final. And if you don't get a semi-final, you know, you're there or thereabouts. And I suppose it looked ideal for James McGrath. He had refereed five games. One of them was a quarter-final. One of them was a provincial final. He wasn't involved in refereeing either the semi-finals, and he didn't get the replay. And I suppose his main contenders were the three lads that ref the semi-finals. So it almost looked certain that he was going to referee the final. And it came as a huge shock to James. It came as a bit of a shock to me. But he's come to a huge shock as James because he has refereed fairly well, in my opinion, this year, as good as probably anyone. And he has applied himself for the first time, and he'll admit this himself in a number of years, excellently this year on his fitness and his attendance at seminars and training in particular.
Do you think he was the right man for the final, or are you happy enough with James Owens?
I know James Owens is a fantastic referee as well, don't get me wrong, but just going on trends, I think, is where everyone was thrown. You know, this is the precedent, as I said earlier, has been a quarter final and final. And, you know, when Fergal Horgan had done the same, he'd gone the same route. It's unlikely that Fergal was going to get back to backs. I'd say Fergal is a little bit disappointed now with his performance last Sunday, that if he had a better performance last Sunday, he's probably realizing now he could have been in the shake-up for the final Sunday week. So, you know, there's a couple of things after coming out in the last week that have changed that normally wasn't the usual going forward to get the All-Ireland final, that's for certain.
And what did you make of James McGrath going on the 6-1 news about this?
To be honest with you, I wouldn't have gone that route. Once he came out on Facebook, I think with social media now, anyone can screenshot your Facebook and send it on to anybody. Obviously, Marty got wind of it. I know James had already emailed Croke Park of his decision to pack in inter-county refereeing with immediate effect. So what Croke Park would have done, in my opinion, is they would have waited until the final was over Sunday week, and they would have released a statement saying James McGrath had retired from inter-county, and he would have gotten time to say his piece. You know, Marty probably did catch him on the hop, and it probably wasn't the right thing to do, but James just felt, I'd say, so shocked and surprised. It's hard to know what way he was feeling, but it certainly wasn't the right way to do it. But one can feel his anger, that's for certain.
Well, like, I just wonder in a wider sense then with referees. Like, you left at the end of last season. Barry Kelly left after the league or thereabouts around April. And now we've got James leaving. Is there any sort of common thread here? Is there a discontent among referees?
Well, I suppose myself and Barry were very lucky. We refereed four All-Irelands. In my case in particular, I'm lucky enough. I was only 41. I could have gone on until you're allowed to go on until you're 50. James McGrath had two, Barry Kelly had four, I had four. So that was three referees doing a lot of All-Irelands in the last few years. So these three men gone, plus Dermot Kerwin, I think, will be gone after this year as he's met the age profile. He's already referee too. So there's a lot of experience gone out of the room. And I wouldn't say I was discontent. I just think it's getting tougher and tougher, Shane. The demands on referees now is ferocious, to be honest with you. Most referees are covering maybe 11K in a game. The amount of training you have to do, but the amount of training you have to do on your own is the big issue I have. It's grand meeting collectively every 3 or 4 weeks to train in Abbottstown, but it's very hard to train on your own and get up to that standard that's required. You know, intercounty teams are training 4 or 5 times a week. They have dietitians, they have physios, they have coaches. Like, you know, it's a big difference. And what, referees are always in the age bracket of 35, 50. So it's a huge, huge commitment. And I think it's inevitable in the future that we're going to go to two referees in hurling with the speed of the game at the moment. So it is very, very tough to continue at the top at intercounty referee because you try to keep the mistakes to the minimum. And plus, I found just the seminars were gone, in my opinion, a little bit negative. It was all about negative decisions, referees, the yellow cards, they missed the red cards. We didn't show enough clips of positive refereeing. And that was just, it's my opinion, and Croke Park know this. I've said it at numerous meetings. So, like, it's a tough place to be. And don't forget, a referee is always on his own before the game and after it. During it, you have your umpires and linesmen, but it can be a very, very lonely place to be at times, that's for sure.
I spoke to one of your refereeing colleagues, and he was explaining to me that if you're not getting the big games, and obviously the aspiration for a good referee would be to get an All-Ireland final at some point, but that the expenses, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but the expenses for a referee is 50 cent a mile compared with, let's say, players in the GPA, they're getting 75% per kilometre, and the fact that it's a kilometre means that they get more than a referee again per unit, if you will. Like, if you're a referee and you're not getting a match fee on top of that and you have to travel 100 kilometres and you're getting the price of it, like, is it even worth it? Like, all the commitment that you're talking about as well, does it feel like this is pointless if I'm not getting the big games?
Well, it's worth it when you're getting the big games, Shane, you're right there. But when you're down refereeing maybe in Division 2 or 3 or only a linesman at some of these games, like, that was one of my reasons as well. I remember travelling to Cork one night for a league game. I left at 10 past 2. The game was at 7 o'clock, Cork and Clare. I wasn't home till 10 past 12. I got, as you said, 50 cent a mile, and it was absolutely freezing. I was on my own in the van. There was 9 or 10 hours gone on my day, maybe 12 hours, actually. And, you know, the incentive. And that's what one of the reasons I went to Croke Park a couple of years ago with a few incentives. Like, what is the incentive to referee, apart from refereeing the big games? What is the incentive to referee or become a referee? How are we selling it, or what are we doing to promote refereeing? That question has to be asked. It's just volunteers going out. What's the credential to be a referee? You do 3 nights in your own county on book on maybe the rules. You're handed a whistle then after your 3 nights, and you're out there on your own nearly, and it's sink or swim. Like, there needs to be more. The game has gone, like, with modern technology, the amount of videos at matches, the amount of cameras, like, there's more and more pressure becoming on a referee because the amount of training players do, they deserve to get most of the decisions correct on the day because it's such a sacrifice for everyone involved.
And how much did you get for that day, Cork versus Clare, that 9-hour day? How much money did you get into your account after that?
You get 50 cent per mile, so roughly it was about 120 mile for me down to Cork, and you'd have the toll bridges, and you'd pull in, and you have to have an automised till receipt for your meal on the way home. So it was probably 120 euro, Shane, 50 or 60 that would be on diesel. So you might have 50 or 60 euro out of it at the end of the day, and you'd get that if you went out to a local club game, maybe 3 mile away, and you're back within an hour and a half.
Well, whatever it is about going on the 6-1 news, I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. I don't think, I'd say if James McGrath could have it back, he probably wouldn't bother doing that, but the expenses are crazy. Like, would you understand that, like, obviously, if you played a match and a decision went against you, you're furious with the referee, but there is that side of it too.
Yeah, there is. I suppose Brian said it there too. You know, as a player, you give so much time to it at the moment that you just want the correct decision to be made during the game. And because of that time and effort that goes in, you know, you're probably, if a decision goes against you when you go home, you're probably livid, you know, and you're giving out, you know, to everybody other than yourself, you know. So I think it's certainly, I think he put his finger on it there. It's about making the right decisions now, because players, managers, everybody, you know, spectators, they give so much time to the game, you know, expense to the game, whatever it is, you know, that you just want the correct decision on the day.
Yeah, we'll ask Brian again now in a second, but Michael, are you happy with the standard of refereeing in hurling at the moment?
You'd be relatively happy, but as Brian says, it is an interesting point. The players are training whatever amount of nights a week and are putting in so much time to it, and the refereeing is not putting in the same time. It's not organised maybe the same, like, so there's not the same amount of time available for them, the same amount of training available for them. So it would be only natural that there would be like mistakes made, and probably maybe a few more than should be made. But where is this kind of shortfall? Is it been made up, or like a Crow Park, or what exactly are they doing to make sure that referees are up to the standard basically that everyone wants them to be? There's obviously always going to be mistakes. I think one of the big things that players have with referees is just want decisions explained to them. Like, if there's a foul, who was the foul and exactly what he did exactly that. They don't want, you know, just a hand up in the face and it's a free, you know. But I think the amount of there was a couple of controversial decisions, obviously, this year with the umpire's decision with the goal and the Tip Waterford game as well. But
it was definitely in.
Yeah, but that's only natural, though. These things are going to happen when there is a shortfall. The players, as I said, are putting in all this effort. Is the same amount being done to make sure that referees are being trained up to that level? And the expenses will be wanting, like, better expenses, more incentives. What are the incentives to referee? I look at some matches in club games and you're thinking, like, the abuse some lads are getting, you're just wondering, like, why are they putting themselves through that? And there's only one reason, and it has to be, you're just absolutely fanatical about the game and you absolutely love the thing, because that's the only reason a lot of people would do it.
Like, Brian, someone tweeted me after the Galway versus Clare game last Sunday, especially referring to Pádraic Mannion and how a few fouls were let go by Fergal Horgan, and they said you need to be pronounced dead to win a free in this game. Like, do you, obviously you were a referee who let it go as well. Do you think that referees in general are trying to let it go and then just sometimes a game gets away from them? Are they, you know, are you just so tired from running around after these players and going up and down after the slitter, which travels so fast, that you mightn't always make the right decisions just because you're so tired?
Well, I suppose a couple of points on that, Shane. And one is the first thing, I never would let a game go where I felt I had full control of it at the time. And whether that had been after 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 40 minutes, unless I thought I had a grasp of the game and a feel for the two teams that was playing and that they were willing to play, I'd never let the game go. I'd always blow the obvious freeze. And sometimes when you don't blow the obvious freeze, Shane, you bring attention to yourself. And that's what happened with Fergal last Sunday. He actually brought attention to himself by not giving the obvious freeze. If Fergal Horgan had to give four or five more obvious frees on the day, he'd have a fine game, because he played a very good advantage for Shane O'Donnell, even though he was taking steps. He was correct to give him the advantage. So, like, if you don't draw a notice to yourself, all the better. But by not issuing the obvious yellow and red card and by not issuing the obvious fouls, you are bringing attention to yourself. But I always used to like to let the man break the tackle, give him maybe the fifth step or sixth step, break the tackle, because the modern player is so fit and strong now, he needs that nearly fifth or sixth step to get away from a tackle. And I always used to like to do that. But if he wasn't getting advantage, I'd always give him the free. But I'd have my arm up and signal, because one of the decisions the other day, Shane O'Donnell had the ball down on the stand side and he'd lost control, and Galway were actually coming out with the ball. And next thing, Fergal gave a free in. But he had his hand up that he was playing advantage. And that drew attention then as well. So the less attention you draw to yourself, and I said it to Barry Kelly the year he sent off Henry Shefflin, like the first yellow card he gave the Cork player that year, I'm not sure the midfielder who he was, but he was gone sprinting away with the ball and Barry brought it back and gave Henry the first yellow card. And next thing, Henry was sent off on the second yellow, correctly so. But no one would have even noticed if Barry Kelly didn't give the first yellow card. So the less times you bring attention to yourself, maybe the better for you as a referee. And just try and get to the match. Try and facilitate both tough physical teams and try and come out of there without anybody talking about you or giving out about you. It's not about the referee. It's about the players in the game. It's how you can facilitate it. That was always my motto, and that's one I always stick to, even refereeing a club game last night. Try and just come out of there without anyone giving out to you.
We have a couple of tweets after coming in, and you can keep them coming in. Serious ego trip coming off this James McGrath story. The 6-1 news ? Come on, the final is about Galway and Limerick, not the referee. That's from Mark and Castle Pollard. Brian Gavin made a great point there, lads. The financial rewards referees get is a disgrace. James McGrath was well within his rights. Paula and Castle Blaney. Just a final question for you, Brian, then, before you go as well. looking into the future, and I've mentioned the fact that you've left that, and you have your own reasons. Barry Kelly's left now. James McGrath has left as well. What do you think the GAA needs to do to ensure that we continue to get good referees through and that they stay interested?
Well, we just have to up our standards, Shane. That's exactly it. We have to set a pathway and a plan in place. For a club referee, first of all, it's the very same as an inter-county setup. If you have development squads or minor teams coming through, you're not going to be successful at the top. And we need to really start going back to our club scene to try and improve refereeing standards, try and have courses, video clips, analysis, try and monitor the performances. That goes on into Leinster and Munster Council and Connacht and Ulster. And then we start getting referees coming through at the right age and in the right criteria to have done all this training. They're well aware. But you see, we fail at sometimes, and Croke Park maybe think I'm giving out the whole time since I retired. It's just highlighting some obvious issues that has to be done. Like, how many of the general public people know the rules? Is Croke Park selling the rules enough to people out there? Are referees meeting inter-county teams enough to go through the rules with them and sit down and try and get a bond between them that both inter-county teams and referees have respect for each other? That in February and March, two or three referees could go to a county and spend an hour and a half, go through video clips with them, sit down with them, give it to them from their side of view, and at least the players will understand, the management will understand, and eventually the spectators can understand. We're just not doing enough of it, and it's an area we fell down in through the years in the GAA. We just need to improve our standards and make people aware of the rules, and from a refereeing point of view and from a player's point of view. I do it in club games, and even I've done it in St. Rhinus Hurling Club only a couple of weeks ago. Sat down, and it's amazing the amount of knowledge that the players don't understand as in towards rules and refereeing. So I think we can definitely go a long way of improving the standards of both refereeing, but also the knowledge of rules, not only to managers, to players, but most importantly, maybe spectators as well.
Brilliant stuff, Brian. I'm sure we'll be chatting to you again soon. All the best.
Thanks very much, Jen. You're more than welcome.
Michael, are you happy with the standard of refereeing, even at club level?
Sure, it's like a club level, it can be very hit and miss realistically, you know, depending on who you get, you know, more than anything else. There's a cohort of four or five that are usually fairly consistently on the ball, and I have no issue with referees making mistakes, as long as there's no, we'd say, badness, or, you know, it's evened out usually, and usually with most referees it is, in fairness. But yeah, like, you have the four or five, but then when you go below that, you know, it's to pick
falls
a mix,
off
really.
A cliff.
You could get anything, yeah.
Darragh, do you think there's ever an issue with, like, some referees ref the game and each decision individually? Some of them sort of ref the scoreboard, as in, she would make a game of it, without even possibly realising it. I felt that Cork didn't get a few decisions against Limerick late on, and that allowed Limerick to come back, just as an example.
Yeah. I suppose it's very difficult, though, you know, for a referee. The way the game has gone, it's so fast, it's so skillful, you know, they have... It's easy for us when we're sitting at home to look at a camera and say, you know, and that split decision has to be made in the field. It's so much more difficult for them. And as Michael said, you're just hoping that, you know, they're going to make mistakes, they're going to make errors, that I suppose those errors even each other out over the course of the game. And usually that happens, you know. But look, sometimes there's probably frees here and there that are going to be given when you look back at a game, but that's every game. It doesn't matter what sport it is, you know. I think you'll always look back at refereeing decisions and say, oh, that decision could have been different, you know, it could have gone the side of the other way. And you're just hoping at the end of it all that it kind of evens each other, that all the decisions kind of even each other out, you know.
Just on that last thing, like, it is so easy when a team is winning by 10 to not give a free, maybe it should have been. I remember refereeing in school at a sports day one year, and there was a team, they were down playing Olympic handball, I think they were down 8-3, yeah. And I gave something that I shouldn't have given till I even up to 8-4, and they ended up winning 9-8.
It's just there was
absolute war.
Did you have money on it?
No, stop, yeah. But it's so easy to let the human element come in. Like, yeah. You want to see the underdog. I swear to God, there was pandemonium. And it was that right at the very end of school, is that the whole place has gone bonkers. Like, but that can easily happen. Like,
yeah.
We got a couple more tweets in. Brian Duggan on Twitter: you should do a 4-hour special on Tip semi-final win over Galway in under 21. Be careful what you wish for. Johnny B on Twitter says, I've got a new greatest for you on the hashtag hurling show and off the ball. What is the greatest hurling interview ever? Some corkers out there: Richie Bennis, Tomás Waters, John Milan, Cody versus Marty, Davy Smallfish, etc, etc. What comes to mind, do you remember Seamus Hickey got man of the match in the All-Ireland semi-final against Limerick in 2014?
Yeah. Yeah.
He was as raw as it comes. He got man of the match, and your man from, I think it was Etihad, had an eagle there beside him as well. Absolutely ludicrous. Okay, moving on then to Tipperary manager chat. So Michael Ryan has stepped down this week. after 3 years in charge, won the All-Ireland in the first year, then between his 9 championship games over the next 2 seasons, just 3 wins. One was over Westmeath, another was over... Were you involved in that Dublin team in 2017, 6-26?
I was still in that, injury, yeah.
Yeah, you were injured for that one. So those were the 2 wins, Dublin obviously not flying at the time. It's very hard to tell who's going to be the next manager. Willie Maher's been mentioned, of course. A few others have been mentioned. What do you see happening here?
Firstly, I think it was a smart decision from Mick's point of view. Obviously, came in the first year and won the All Ireland. It was always going to be difficult if they didn't win the All Ireland the second year to kind of back that up. And things were probably going unbelievably well until the 17 league final, and then Galway kind of blew them out of the water, and they were kind of chasing their tail for the rest of the season, even though they did kind of push Galway to a point in the semi final. But again, this year, there's just, you know, a few things here and there, and things just, they just didn't seem to be motoring that well. And while I think he had set up to go back again for the 4th year and with the same management team in place, I don't know what happened in the meantime, but he obviously realised maybe that a change of voice was needed, and that kind of seemed to be the thing that he was saying there. And
a backlash too, to be fair, in Tipperary, people weren't happy with it.
Yeah, I think a lot of that was as well, is because the county board came out straight away and said Mick Ryan is, you know, a manager for 2019 or whatever, and you just need to let things settle for a while, and everybody needs to have a think about things. Have you ever gone outside of Tipperary for a manager?
No.
So realistically, that's probably going to be the way it's going to stay. I know Willie Maher was mentioned, Tommy Dunn has been mentioned, Brendan Cummins, Liam Cattle obviously with the 21s. There are plenty of good candidates there. Just something fresh is needed. I would go with the younger voice, maybe someone like Willie Maher. That's who I would. I think he's served a pretty good apprenticeship over the last 6 or 7 years. Was involved with Watford as well, and there's also the possibility he was involved with Derek McGrath. Maybe Derek McGrath would possibly be involved in his backroom team. I think someone like that. But there are plenty of good candidates there.
Mm. Yeah, it's very like Kerry football job, really, isn't it? You could make a lot of comparisons there. You know, a lot of underage success in the last couple of years, young players coming through, and I think it's just whatever manager gets it. I think it could be someone like that that's coming through from minor under 21 that has dealt with a lot of the players, you know, and trying to, merge that in with the senior players or whatever it is. And it could be someone like that that come in. Just a new voice and something new in the dressing room.
Like they, an All-Ireland win under minor win 2 years ago. Under 21 final this year.
There's zero excuse for Tip not to challenge for an All-Ireland.
There's like an abundance of talent there.
In the number of years. And I was just looking at, after watching the under-21s, which we'll briefly discuss now last night, the forward line that Tip have to pick from next year if they want. Seamus Callanan, Jason Ford. Stop me when I don't name a class player here, by the way. Bubbles O'Dwyer, John and Noel McGrath, Bonner Maher, Dan McCormick. Jake Morris was outstanding last night. Keane Darcy, we saw him come on in one of the games and score an equaliser, I think, against Cork. Looked good. Billy McCarthy, unfortunately, I think, has had a bit of a Tom Parsons-esque type injury with his knee, done all his ligaments and dislocated his knee. It seems a terrible one altogether. Tweet in there, Liam Cahill is the best fit for the job, lads. No doubt about it. Stephen and Nina. I'm sure there'll be differing opinions on that one. The under-21s last night had a fantastic win after getting pretty much annihilated by Cork in the Munster final. I thought it was a very interesting image of Sean Blahan when he came off for, I think we have the image there that was on TG Carr last night. Sean Blahan was taken off, and if ever a guy was shooting daggers at the, presumably towards his management bench.
He'd have like red lasers coming out of his eyes or something.
That guy was not happy. I was very surprised to see him taken off because I think he's a really good player. There was 2 red cards for Galway in that game. Both of them were for low blows, which I thought was quite interesting. And
as a WWE fan, I was absolutely loving it.
They were loving it. You just thought the only thing he's missing is a Stone Cold Stunner just to finish it off. And I think we have an image here of Mark Keogh getting a red card for Tipperary. You can see there he put his arms across the goalkeeper. His hurley is down low. And I suppose the issue there is that the goalkeeper's hurley is actually rebounding back into his own head as well. So definitely not a red card. And that actually comes back to... Did the referee, Sean Clear, feel a little bit under pressure to even up the game because Galway, you know, they'd gone down to 14 men, Tip were kind of running away with it a little bit. Here was an opportunity, and from a distance it might have looked bad enough. So I think, you know,
into it again. Like, it was 15 on 13, so it does come into it. Like, and the keeper should have had... The hurl should never have been here. Yeah. It should have been here. So
you're blaming the keeper for getting hit by Keogh.
Well, sometimes, I tell you what now, there's another thing on referees. Sometimes players get no sympathy when they, they are fouled, but they kind of walk into a tackle or walk into a challenge, and it's almost like he nearly deserves to be hit there. And that does happen as well. So, like, yeah, but there's no way that's a red card for me. No,
I think Tip are going to be in trouble in the final, though. I thought they changed things up quite well from the Munster final in that they sat a lot deeper. They really pressured the puck outs really well for Galway. Galway missed an awful lot of chances early on, and that kind of put them on the back foot.
They've nothing to lose, though, in fairness.
That Cork team has Dara Fitzgibbon, it has Shane Kingston, it has Mark Coleman. Declan Dalton looks imperious on the frees as well.
It's quite an experienced under 21 team, isn't it?
And Tip don't have that, really. You know, so
they can have, I tell you what, though, they can have who they want, though. Cork are cock a hoop now after winning their last two games by, what, nearly probably 25 points, I'd say, combined the last two games. They have all these superstars that you mentioned. I think they're 1-10 for the final or something along those lines. They're totally expected to win. Tip have zero to lose and will probably bring that down well into single figures. And I guarantee it'll be more than 4 or 5 in that. They've nothing to lose at all.
Tip or Tip, isn't it?
Tip or Tip, boy. Cork or Cork.
Galway or Galway and Sorrel and Limerick or Limerick as well. Like, the All-Ireland final is going to be an absolute bruiser. Like, do you expect a bruiser?
I expect the bruiser. I just hope it lives up to our expectations. We've had the best summer of hurling, you know, and I mean,
shame
we're just hoping it will. we're just hoping for one more game that lives up to the year, you know.
Yeah.
And it will be a bruiser. I think we're going to have some great matchups all over the field, like I said earlier, in terms of physicality. And then, you know, I think some of the Limerick backs have been a little unheard in terms of they probably haven't got, you know, enough. There hasn't been enough talk about them. I think Sean Finn has been brilliant. Mike Casey's been really good at full back. Richie English in the other corner, you know. So I think it's going to be really interesting, and it's going to, you know, the first 10-15 minutes when they match up is going to be interesting to see how that goes.
Yeah. Like, if you imagine what the middle eight battle would be like, I would just imagine it's basically going to be like that. Just a huge amount of players just swarming in the middle. Michael, would you say that?
To be honest with you, and that is the way it's gone now. And if you ever have two teams that play nearly the exact same, Limerick and Galway play the exact same, the half forwards are withdrawn that deep. It's essentially who can win that ball and who can get it in, because look at all the space in front of the two full back lines. But it is going to be it's going to be an absolute war zone in there. I can't wait for it, And just even we're talking about matchups as well, like Johnny Glynn is going to be on Mike Casey with something completely different.
And
I was just about to say that,
because you're going to have so many bodies out here. I think you're probably going to look, they're going to put Johnny Glynn at the edge of the square probably on Casey, you know, and try and bombard him in the first couple of minutes.
He's given up surely 6 inches.
Something
there
that we would have seen Kilkenny do so often in their prime, you know, putting balls in there. I remember so Henry Shefflin got the goal against Clare in that final where high ball came in, flicked it to the net. Something like that, you know, where they're just going to try and open up space here in front and exploit that, the defence maybe.
Well, if this is Limerick defending here and that's Johnny Glynn there, you obviously want Declan Hannan sweeping in front or getting his hurley up in front of Glynn and having, you know, Casey spoiling from behind. Then what do you do about a little lad called Joe Canning here who probably, you know, if you don't mark him and if he gets a bit of ball, he'll pick up five, six points.
That's the luxury that they have, you see. If you can still play through, as congested as it is there, you can still play through the lines if it's played accurate. And all Canning has to do in a situation like that is when he gets the ball is plant the feet. Yeah. You're not moving around on it, you're just planting the feet and popping it over. Then Hannan has to come out. You keep him honest, then you create the space inside. And maybe they won't bombard ball in straight away. Maybe they'll try and prevent Hannan from sitting and getting to try and push out on Canning and then create the space and then put it in. But so many interesting kind of matchups there. I really think it's the battle of the two half, not even half forward lines. It's the two wing forwards on both teams and basically the effect that the two of them are going to have on the game, because they're going to be doing the same sort of role. They're going to be up and down 70, 80 yards. It's who can get on the most kind of ball there.
And as well, like, you'd imagine Keane Lynch and Darrow Dunphy will try and sit back and cause a bit of, you know, just traffic in front of Joe Canning as well.
I think Darrow Dunphy probably does that a lot, doesn't he? He tries to link up. He's probably the link player that gets it going, and he's a really good runner with the ball, very intelligent, and tries to pick out some good passes inside, you know, especially into Gillan and these lads. And as we've seen Lynch coming through a couple of times in the semi-final, especially for the goal, you know, kind of blindsiding maybe his marker and coasting in along. And I think they're going to try to do that again. I think if Hannan is the one to sit back then in front here, you'll probably have Darrow Dunphy coming further back, you know, to watch that. I think Galway the last day, it's going to be interesting to see if McInerney starts. I think for Galway, Johnny Cohn is like an extra defender. He spent a lot of his time defending anyway, you know. And
sort of wing forwards at times as well.
Yeah, so I think it, against Clare the first day in Croke Park, I was quite surprised. Like Johnny Glynn and David Burke got a lot of chances. You know, they seemed to be going forward a lot. So it'll be interesting the next day to see how they match up and who decides to sit back, who decides to kind of take the game to the opposition maybe. But yeah, look, we're in for a cracker, I think, yeah.
David Burke's role has changed a small bit. As in, I think they realise that they need a couple of points from him. Yeah, he does push forward at times. And even in last year's All-Ireland final, he had been playing kind of nearly as a sweeper, almost coming up to that. And they realised then that they didn't need to play him there against Waterford, so he ended up with 4 points by pushing up. Yeah, so he's been very far up in the last two games. Even against Clare, I think he intercepted a flick out from Donald Toohey on the 21 at one stage, because they realised that he's such a good scorer as well. So it'd be interesting to see kind of the role that he plays in a congested area there. Maybe they might try and get him forward a bit more.
What about at the other end then? Because if you're like Dahi Burke's obviously going to man the square for Limerick, and I think at times they kind of have this sort of triangle formation, at times they're in a spine, just from watching them at matches this year. If you were Limerick, would you match him up, you know, Galan, your big hitter, against Dahi Burke? Or would you say, do you know what, Graham Mulcahy, put your speed in there, we'll isolate you and pop the ball in front of you. Would you put Seamus Flanagan in there? What would you do?
Personally, I'd probably have Flanagan. I think he's a great man to try and get out in front, you know, plays the two corners. You'll often see him coming out almost to the 45 and gathering ball here, you know, and looking for the runners off him. So I think he's the man I'd try and put in there.
And would you use him to try and drag Dahi away from the square?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that's easier said than done. I think, again, if McInerney's there, you're going to see McInerney probably sitting back a little bit more, and that covers Dahi Burke. He can go a little bit further out the field, you know. But Flanagan will be my man, and then you're trying to, I suppose, get Gillan on the ball as much as possible. He's a sharp shooter, really. He can, you know, he's a great striker of the ball, and if he gets one look at the post, you know, he'll have a snapshot.
He can hold on to his hurdle. Hurdle in the final. Yeah, yeah. If he hits the net, which he could have had, he could have hit the net 2 or 3 times the last day. If he hits the net once or twice the next day, it's...
If he can hold on to his hurley.
Yeah, actually, seriously, game on.
Dahi Burke, when he snapped that brilliant ball over John Conlon, dropped his hurley, and I remember him doing it against Dahi Burke once or twice. So if the two boys might end up with no hurley in their hand.
Just on what Dara said as well, while there is a temptation maybe to move Mulcahy or Galan in, I think they'd be foolish to go away.
They kind of do it,
but I think they'd be foolish just to plant Mulcahy in and think that they're going to be able to get a low ball. I think what served them well so far, the two boys seem to hover in around the breaking ball very well. I think to actually put one of them in there for a really prolonged period I don't think it would work.
And Mulcahy did that so well the last day, didn't he? Yeah. Picking off points, kind of hovering around there and picking up breaks. And
see how fast he is, unreal. How quickly he decelerates and stops, and his man almost goes past him. Like, he's been phenomenal.
Courtney's phenomenal. Yeah, yeah,
you'd have. Yeah. Pat Ryan as well, we know how quickly he can turn, and you particularly know how well Pat Ryan can turn. Remember at the start of the year we played you well in a challenge match and he did some step on you, made you look like a right agent.
You start talking about steps here and all, because I have a litany of them in you.
Didn't I blow you out of the water in runs of training the other night? We have a couple of tweets in. Fionn says, same could be said for Waterford as Tip, the year of less games could be a help for 2019. And James Johnson on Facebook said, lads, what do you think of the ticket allocation to the counties? They're so scarce at county level here in Limerick. They're going to be like hen's teeth, aren't they?
Yeah.
The amount of particularly Limerick people looking for tickets is just unreal. I'd imagine JP has a hefty allocation.
What about the benches? Like, Limerick's bench was incredible against Cork. Do you think Galway have enough in reserve if their first 15 aren't going to
I think if you look at the matchups on the bench, then, you know, you'd have to say Limerick are ahead there, aren't they? Just on the last couple of games, bringing in someone like Shane Dowling, who is, you know, such a leader and a character to bring off your bench, is huge. And I don't think Galway have had that luxury this year, you know, in the last 20 minutes or so. So I think someone like Pat Ryan, as you said, you know, Shane Dowling, yeah. Like, Kevin Downes hasn't been seen, has he? Yeah. You know, and
David Dempsey,
like, yeah.
It's phenomenal that has been
Richie
left
McCarthy
off.
Richie isn't getting a sniff, really.
Yeah, no. Like, Galway don't have that. They bring on Joe Cooney and Conor Cooney back on in extra time against Clare. Like, as good of a panel as they have, they don't have that same level. And if Limerick are in the trenches with 15 or 20 to go and in the game, they definitely have the advantage off the bench.
One final thing before I let you go. The Boyle Sports odds have Joe Canning at 11-4 as favourite for Hurler of the Year. Pádraic Mannion 3-1, Dahi Burke 5-1, Galan 6, Keane Lynch and Conor Whelan 10. John Conlon is down at 16-1. Who do you think will win it?
It's hard to look past Joe, isn't it, really?
Sorry, who should win it? And I'm saying his form has been excellent this year, so he's rightly in the
he's been excellent. I mean, you know, Dahi Burke has been brilliant too. Before they played Galway, you'd probably have said John Conlon was in line. You know, he was probably up there with one of the favourites. And it wasn't that John Conlon was poor in any of the two games, you know. It was just that Dahi Burke, it was a brilliant battle inside there between the two of them. And I think Burke, you know, managed to curb his influence a little bit, or just enough that it probably got Galway over the line as such, you know. So for me, I'd probably go with a defender. I'd like to see Dahi Burke winning. I think he has been phenomenal. When any ball that comes in there, you know, he's just so tough and so difficult to round that I think I'd probably go for Dahi Burke.
I'd love to see Dahi Burke winning. I don't think he will, because I think we're going to see a high scoring final. And I think a lot of people would say, rightly or wrongly, that maybe that Joe didn't deserve, those other years he would have deserved to be Hurler of the Year, maybe more than last year. But this year he's been outstanding, and particularly last day he dragged them over the line when they really need to. If he hits 12, you know, 4 or 5 from playing a line ball or something like that, I'd say it's probably his.
I think Pádraic Mannion will end up with it. I think he's been man of the match, or like an 8 out of 10 in almost every game for Galway.
He's so consistent, isn't he?
He's probably going to have a big final, and I think he'll just about do it. But look, I've gone through all the names there. Any one of them.
If Aaron Galan puts up a big score and Limerick win,
you
probably have your winner there.
Yeah, because he'll be hitting the freeze as well. And it's going to be a classic final.
It should be a belter, in fairness. Yeah.
Okay, right. I think that's all we've got time for with you, lads. We'll be thanks very much to Dara.
No worries. See you tonight.
you probably want to be fair.
Thanks to you, Michael,
thanks,
as well.
Jen,
we've got a video coming up of David Burke, who was talking to Maura Trasany Callig during the week, and after that we'll have Leon Blanche from Boyle Sports and Ger Gilroy of Off the Ball.
It's All-Ireland final time, and we're a few days out from the All-Ireland final. I'm joined by Galway's David Burke. Twice in 2 years, it's not bad.
Yeah, it's good. It's great to be back in the final again, and you know, we've worked really hard over the last 12 months to put ourselves in this position, so as a squad, we're really looking forward to it.
Obviously, there was a lot of, I don't want to use the word pressure, but expectation last year that could this be the year that Galway finally do it. You did it. This year again, I'm assuming there's still a pressure, obviously, still final, but it must be a different kind?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it was a totally different kind of pressure all year. As players anyway, we naturally put ourselves under pressure. You know, we're our own worst critics at times, and this year it's been different. You know, a lot of things going on in the media saying Galway were the team to beat, so look, you just have to bottle that up, and you have to go out and prove to people that you are the team to beat. And I think we've shown that all year in our performances. And yeah, look, it's going to be an interesting battle now the next day against Limerick.
Isn't it better though that the media, and I use me in that I suppose as well, are saying Galway are the team to beat rather than the look at, you've no idea what Galway is going to show up today, because that was the reputation. You were bottlers.
Yeah, look, that was said over the years, I suppose, that, you know, a lot of people said what goal is going to turn up, but we put in massive consistency, you know, in the last 4 or 5 years now, and you know, we're one of the top teams in the country now, and you know, up there with Limerick now as well. So look, they've shown the grit and determination that we've shown, and consistency throughout the championship, because it's such a grueling championship this year. And look, we're both deserved to be in the final.
Where is the consistency coming from that Galway didn't have before? Because now there's no question about it. You are champions, you look like champions, and you certainly are the ones to beat. Where is that coming from that wasn't there before, despite, I'm sure, doing all the hard work that's necessary?
Yeah, look, Galway's always had brilliant hurlers on the field down through the years, even since I started, and we've been on the wrong side of 1 pint defeats to Waterford and Tip when I started off first, and Joe came along then and played Kilkenny in matches and lost a few finals to them. But Joe was never down to hurling ability or anything like that. Maybe just belief more than anything in ourselves and getting the job done. And I think we've just really trusted ourselves, trusted the group, and trusted what we're all going to do. And I think that's massive, and we've shown that all year.
When you're playing those tight games, for example, the one against Kilkenny and the 2 games against Clare, they were really entertaining, great to watch. When you're playing them, do you enjoy that playing when it's that tight? Are you thinking, this is it, this is what I've been training for? Or are you thinking, God, I wish there was more space on that scoreboard?
I know, look, you can't think like that. You have to, as a young person and growing up, you want to be naturally playing in these. You train to put yourself in these situations, and you want to play in games like this. So obviously you do what you can to get yourself over the line, and whatever way you win, you get build up whatever leads. But obviously Clare were a brilliant team. They fought back twice, trying to bring us back to level and a point in it. So it was all about for us getting the job done, whatever way it looked. It mightn't look pretty, but two completely different games between the drawn day and the replay, and you know, we've both defences probably tightened up a lot and didn't ship as many points, and look, we would have been happy enough relatively in defence and probably missed a couple of scores. So look, we still have a lot of work on. We're a really hungry group. We want to get better all the time, and we've shown that the last taking.
I'm sure you've taken some lessons from last year as well in your preparation up to the All-Ireland final. Is there anything you're doing differently this year that you might have learned from last year?
Not really. Look, we've less time obviously coming into this game. Look, it's not ideal, but we'll deal with it, and we'll get the bodies recovered in time for the game. And sometimes all year we've been dealing with just one game, recover, mentally get down from it, get ready for the next game a week after. And you know, we're probably used to it at this stage now. So look, sometimes for a player it's better when you don't have too much time to think about things and just get out there and hurl and don't think about it too much. And sometimes that's when you see players going at it and showing what they're really able to do. So look, it bodes well for a series final the next day.
It's a great situation to be in, to be in an All-Ireland final. Are you enjoying the build-up?
Yeah, look, it's not often you get these chances, and you know, your hurling career doesn't last too long, so you have to enjoy these things when they come around and enjoy them with your family and friends and the people you surround yourself with and live with, and obviously the players and the group you have with you. So look, it's a brilliant time, and obviously we know it's a 70-minute game, that's what it's all about, so we'll have to look to put a serious performance together for that.
Finally, come the evening of the 19th of August, are you going to be the great Galway 2-in-a-row team?
Yeah, we please God we will be.
So that was Galway fullback Dahi Burke chatting with Mara Trasany Cialic. Now we're joined on Skype by Leon Blanche of Boyle Sports. Leon, how are you doing?
How are you doing, Shane? I'm down here in the west.
You're looking well.
I know. Listen, the sun is out in Galway for once. I wish it was here like last week. I'm outside in Munro's Live, the best live entertainment venue here in Galway. And it's a historical building. And we're here now to obviously preview two huge football semi-finals at the weekend, Shane.
So with Munro's there, are you after coming out of it or are you about to head into it?
No, I haven't gone into Munro's just yet. We'll be going for a bit of live music later on. As I said, I'm a big fan of live music. And if anyone's ever down in Galway, to be fair, I've been here many a time. The bands are exceptional, run by Gary and Rob Munro. A fantastic place to come and visit.
There are a couple of, there's no hurling this weekend, but there are a couple of huge All-Ireland semi-finals. We'll start off with your own team, Dublin, against Galway. First of all, what's the prices here?
Yeah, look, I mean, Dublin are very short. I think, Shane, looking at the Galway performance against Monaghan, I was very surprised they took the foot off the pedal. As we alluded to when we were doing this show last week, I thought, go out and beat Monaghan, finish top and avoid Dublin, but they haven't. And the Dubs now are 7-1 on to beat Galway. You can back Galway at 6-1, and the draw is 14-1. Look, there's no doubt in my mind Dublin will win, Shane. It's a matter of fact, should they be able to cover the handicap spread? And at the moment, it's -6. The Dubs are 6-5 on. You can back Galway +6 at 6-5. And look, I think Galway will put in a better performance than they did last week against Monaghan, but I don't think it'll be good enough. They were good against Dublin in the league final. I'll give Galway plenty of credit for that performance. They really had a go at Dublin. But even though Dublin were a man down, how are you, Ger? Welcome to the show. Even though Dublin were a man down, they were able to beat Galway. And I think they'll do it again, lads. Ger, I was just saying the Dubs are -6. I mean, I think they're well capable of covering that spread against Galway. I just don't know how Galway are going to pick themselves up having played so bad against Monaghan.
I think you can write the game against Monaghan off completely. I think that's one of those games that they didn't go into it with any intensity, and I'm writing a big scratch against that. The 6 points, my concern with the 6 points is the tippy-tappy, ticky-tacka, fannying about.
The last 10 minutes, they just hold on to possession and just play the game out.
They will kill that game. So I can see them getting 3-4 points up against Galway and deciding we're going to keep that powder dry until we absolutely need it. Unless Galway come out and punch them in the mouth very early on, in which case, then I can see them actually having one of those massive victories where they blow them out of the water over the next. But I just think there's.
I think Galway will get inside the 6 points because if you look at the league, and I know a league is league, but the league game in Salt Hill they drew and there was a couple of red cards. If you look at the league final, they were within 4 points, and I know Dublin had 14 men for the last couple of minutes. But I don't see Galway being all that far away here, and I certainly don't like anything over 6 points is generally a fairly comfortable win here. I can't see it being overly comfortable.
I think the biggest bet that we've all missed, I don't know if you tipped it last week, was Monaghan to win. Certainly in various WhatsApp groups, I was on holidays and wasn't paying any attention to it, and all my mates were like, "Oh, bet of the year, Monaghan to win this game, no doubt whatsoever." And I wasn't on it. I'm sickened. I didn't realise that Galway were going to phone it in. Who knew?
But that's the thing.
I knew, Jerry. I told Shane last week I was going all in Monaghan. The talk around Galway around race week was that they were going to take it easy against Monaghan. And the thought process was, get this, we'd rather play Dublin in a semi-final than a final. I don't know where that thought process comes from. But anyway, I think both of you are right. I think Galway plus six is a decent bet at 6-5. And lads, this is Ireland. We started in the sunshine, and now I'm doing this live in the rain. This is fantastic.
Well, that's Galway in particular. It never rains in Galway.
No, it never rains in the West. But lads, I was looking at a couple of other, all the specials, of course, offtheball.com/boilsports for all the GEA specials over the weekend. But the man of the match is always an intriguing little bet. And if you want to have a little bit of an interest, and I was looking at the likes of Kieran Kilkenny. He just is so key to Dublin getting on the ball. He's 6-1 favourite. But for me, a little bit of value has to be Howard for Dublin at 12-1. I think he's been the find of the season. I think he's going to be Young Player of the Year for a certainty. And I think at 12-1, lads, for him to be RTE Man of the Match, it represents a bit of decent value.
I actually think there's going to be a red card here.
Yeah.
You're going to have Philly McMahon sitting in Damien Comer's shorts, and something has to give there.
Yeah, I mean, I can see red cards all over the place. Galway are pretty good at going down whenever they get a little. They feel the slightest bit of pressure on you.
Yeah.
As Daniel Flynn learned to his cost in the game in Newbridge. I just feel like Galway have become a very cynical team and know when to take dives. And look, it's exactly what Dublin will be doing to them and have done over recent years. So I would go along with that. I think if the referee lets it go at all early on, then he's asking for trouble in the second half. And if he doesn't let it go early on, then you're almost guaranteed that he's going to have two yellows because... So either way, I think that...
I'd say we're all going for Dublin here. But yeah. The reason I give Galway a chance is the same reason you should give him a chance all year, is that Shane Walsh's pace, Ian Burke's got is so clever, you've Damien Comer is a brute, Eamon Brannigan has got speed, they've got a bit of class everywhere.
The injuries is the one thing that have begun to mount up for them, just in terms of how the game finishes out in that last 15 minutes.
Is this the first day we start to feel the effects of Dermot Connolly not being there?
I think we've been feeling it all along. I don't think Connolly would have been as static in possession, as sideways, as crab-like as the team have been. I think that he would have just been like, look, we're 5 points up. We're far better than this team. Why aren't we just actually going out and beating them? I think you saw a bit of that with Kevin McManam when we were talking with Mossy Quinn and OTBAM this morning about that, and just the change, the injection and the direction that he offered the team when he came off the bench. So I do think that you're going to... I don't think they're going to coast to an All-Ireland this year. I think there has to be a few close games for them, and I think Tyrone could give them a close game. So I don't know.
So that means you're obviously...
You'd have to give Galway a chance because of how they played in the league. I know, and I agree with you, you can write off the game against Monaghan, but I'm a big believer in consistency. Keep performing, keep winning. Keep the juggernaut rolling on. And that's why I just think Dublin, they'll go through, but we're all in agreement. I think Galway plus six at 6-5 is a very decent proposition.
Tyrone and Monaghan then.
I'm looking at this. Tyrone are quite heavy favourites considering their 1 point in the spread. So it's 11-8 on. You can get 13-8 at the moment on Ball Sports about Monaghan.
And what's the spread?
A point.
Yeah, only a point, lads. I think here Monaghan now are coming into Croke Park against Tyrone, as Jerry rightly said. They're 11-8 on. As the rain is starting to lash down now outside Monroe's live. But we'll get this done, lads. This is called dedication. But in fairness, Monaghan are 13-8 chance. And to be fair, I would have put this pretty much 10-11 your pick. I don't think there's an awful lot between these two sides. And I think there's a distinct possibility the draw is a 7-1 chance. And sometimes even backing -1 in the handicap for the draw at 8-1, I don't think you could be too far wrong. I don't see either team being able to blow each other out of the park. I think McManus is key for Monaghan. I think Peter Hart is key for Tyrone. But I think the way Monaghan responded to letting that win against Kerry slip, to come down to Galway and get that win. Yes, Galway weren't 100%. We all know that. But I think Monaghan are coming in here full of confidence. But you can say the exact same thing about Tyrone. Huge performance against Dublin. Then they go to Ballybuffet and beat Donegal. This is going to be one hell of a bruising encounter. And I'm going to sit on the fence here and go for 7-1 the draw.
There's a lot to like about this Monaghan team. The only thing is, if Conor McManus gets tied up, I know you've got a few other players like Mac and Espy, you've got Conor McCarthy, you've got Jack McCarron there as well, but I just don't know if they're going to have enough scorers. Like, Carol O'Connell's brilliant, the two Hugheses as well. So, like, there's great quality all over the field. But, like, Tyrone, even if the starting forwards, like Peter Hart's going to be in the forward line a lot, Matty Donnelly driving through, Tiernan McCann, Rory Brennan, they've got a serious bench as well. Like, Lee Brennan came on and went to town. Their bench scored 2-5. Declan McClure came on. Loughran as well. So I think it's hard to back against Tyrone winning this game, albeit I'd say it'll be narrow.
Yeah, I think that it's well priced up here, where you're tempted, they're tempting you in to pick in Monaghan, when actually you're thinking the rational analysis is you've got to make Tyrone favourites. This is an opportunity for them to get revenge. This is in a venue that they know they have the opposition's number. And like, I think this is going to come down to which goalkeeper kicks their frees in a bizarre way.
Well, you'd back Beggan there, wouldn't you, ahead of Niall Morgan?
Except he missed a few in the second half in one of the games. He had a brilliant first half in one of the games recently and then missed a few in the second half. And you were like, OK. And then Niall Morgan creamed one at the end of the match now. And again, and McGinley made the point. It was a hero point because they'd already won the game.
True.
You know, so... I don't know, maybe this is redemption for Niall Morgan, and maybe this is the bit where the 5-1 on Rory Beggan isn't actually automatically the All-Star goalkeeper.
Okay, so put your head on the block then. Who are you going for, Ger?
Despite all that, I'd really like to see Monaghan win this.
Yeah, and our producer...
Well, I think you see a lot about this game is that no goal scorer is favourite at 6-1.
Ooh, that's
and I think
good.
Looking at the... Yeah, but I think looking at the total points, 33.5 under a 10-11... is the way I'd be playing this game. I can't see there being 34 or more points scored in Tyrone against Monaghan. I'm definitely with the unders. No goal scorer, I think, is a decent proposition at 6-1. And I've been amazed with McManus. And for him to be man of the match, he's 7-1. And Peter Hart, for a little bit of value, if you're in the Tyrone camp, he's a 10-1 chance to be man of the match. I'm looking forward to both games, lads, but I'm predicting a Dublin, hopefully, v Monaghan final.
Thanks very much for that, Leon. Enjoy Galway. I'm sure you will.
Oh, we certainly will. And I think I've earned a little point in Monroe's Live after standing or sitting in the rain for the last 10 minutes.
Fair play to you. Yeah, so neck on the block, you're just about going to Tyrone, are you?
I think Tyrone are going to win, but obviously I want Monaghan too. We've had, like, this Tyrone team have been, fair play to them for recovering the way they have done over the course of the season, but like, wouldn't it be nice to see Monaghan in the final?
I think so. Wouldn't we all want Monaghan and Galway, really? We're sick of looking at Dublin in there, aren't we?
Well, I mean, I think the greatest team of all time deserve a bit more. You know, come on.
Is that disrespectful?
Yeah, well, you're Tipperary on the far end of a lashing from Kilkenny all those years. You understand what it's like.
Yeah.
Stop that five in a row as well. I think I want to see them get five in a row. I want to see them, like...
You do want to see them?
Yeah, come on.
Is that because you hate Kerry? Because you want to say, Kerry, you haven't done it, but Dublin have.
I don't hate Kerry at all. I love Kerry.
Why do you hate Kerry so much? Just because they beat you last weekend.
How's your buddy Joe Canning? Was that you he was talking about?
In what?
Given the disrespect.
Last week in the Hurling Show, all we did was talk about how well they did to be leading in extra time despite having so many lads off injured. So, Joe.
It wasn't you.
I'm with you. Right, so that's it for the Hurling Show this week. We're going to have reporters at the All-Ireland semi-finals at Croke Park this weekend. If you want to watch us back, YouTube, you can get us on Twitter, you can get us everywhere. And rate us 5 out of 5 if there's a place to do that. We'll see you next week.
GAA on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.